and she's 29 again. And but for the women here, so that you'll know that I'm trying to be romantic a little bit, I left a birthday card with a gift inside with my 10-year-old, who delivered and did well this morning, and then ended up making her lunch, and then the boys were instructed to take my wife out for dinner, how to pull out the seat for their mom, and the big instruction was, let your mom pick the restaurant. Don't end up at McDonald's. So, hey, I'm so excited to be able to be with you for three messages, and I'm going to give those messages. I'm going to start pretty soon, but I just thought, you know, I'm going to be with you for like 24 hours here. Do you mind if I tell you my testimony first, so you can kind of get to know who I am? I grew up in an Italian-Irish home in Chicago. Eight children in my family. I'm number five. There were four girls born first, then four boys. I'm the oldest boy. And what do you think an Italian-Irish boy in Chicago wants to be when he grows up? And you'll guess it right away. Mafia, correct. And what's the other thing? Well, maybe what their mothers want them to be. What's the other thing? If you think about it, Irish, Italian, Catholic priest. Very good. So I grew up literally wanting to be in the mafia while my mom wanted me to be a Catholic priest. I was torn. Priest, mafia. And I had decided that mafia gets married, priest don't. I'm going mafia. And here's where it started. When I was in eighth grade, you know, my parents were divorced, eight kids, and we just scrambled for money. So we all went to work. And when I was in eighth grade, I got a job in a restaurant and a bar. It was so what I would do is I was a busboy till midnight on the weekends, and then at midnight I'd switch over and become a bar boy and stock whiskey and beer and ice and things like that. And I was so in eighth grade, I don't know what time you had to be home, but in eighth grade I was walking home from work at 4 or 5 in the morning every Friday and Saturday night into high school. And now my dad's gone, you know, my parents are divorced, and I'm with all Italian men. And they've got Danny the bookie doing illegal gambling there. I'm sure Danny's in mafia, at least in my mind. And there's weapons behind the bar. There's a big .357 Magnum. And, you know, I'm like any guy. We look for a role model. And I thought, man, these big Italian men, that's who I want to be. So I was torn. Then I know my mom's praying every day. And still prays every day. And I knew she was praying I'd be a priest. So when I was, you know, the oldest boy. So when I was 16, I woke up, you know, I was playing sports in high school, and things seemed to be going well for me in almost every area except, you know, what's the lack of the father at home, things like that. Well, I woke up in the summer, a Sunday, and I thought, you know, I don't know, I couldn't have described it as a hole in my heart, but it was a hole in my heart, and I thought, I don't know how to fill it. Girlfriends don't fill it. Sports don't fill it. I don't know how to fill this. Money doesn't fill it. And so I decided the answer must be in church. So what I did is I opened up the yellow pages to churches, and there were pages and pages and pages of Protestant churches. And I thought, oh, what am I going to do? So I thought about it for a while, and I thought, you know what I'll do? I'll go to every single church in the phone book in alphabetical order. I'll just lay it out in alphabetical order. I'll just do it that way. So I called the first church and I said, can you wear jeans to your church? They said, sure. So I got my sister to go with me and I went to this church and it was Assembly of God. A. So I walked in, I'm Catholic. I walk in and the second I walked in, everybody's swaying like this. And I just sat in like the last row, almost the last row. And the pastor got up and he said, how many of you here believe that God can answer prayer? So I'm in almost last row, so I can see everybody responding. So just, I think everybody raised their hand. So I raised my hand. And plus I thought, well, I believe that. And then he said, well, how many of you need an answer to prayer? Look to me again. Everybody raised their hand. So I raised my hand. You know, I wanted to be unanimous again. So then he got up and he gave a message. Honestly, I don't remember what he said. I think it was on prayer. At the very end, he said, would everyone here bow your heads and close your eyes? So I looked around. They did, so I did. And then I had my eyes closed, head bowed, and he said, would anyone here like to receive Jesus Christ into their heart? So I thought, well, it's going to be unanimous again. So raised my hand, thinking, who wouldn't want to, you know? So then he said, Would the person who raised their hand please come forward? Person singular, and I didn't know anything. You know, I'm not used to a Protestant background. I don't know what's happened. So I thought I had just volunteered to teach the Bible. I don't know anything about the Bible. And so what I decided to do was to help them look for that person. Yeah, who raised their hand? And, I wasn't going to move. Well, this bodybuilder guy had cheated and kept his eyes open and saw me raise my hand. So he gets out of the pew. I thought we were all supposed to have our eyes closed. And he came around to where I was. The second he got up, I knew he had cheated. And he tapped me on the shoulder and he goes, hey, Bubba, can I share some verses out of the Bible with you? And I thought, you could do whatever you like. And so we walked to the front. The service ended. He shared Christ with me. Now, isn't this God? I didn't know what church to pick. He shares Christ with me, and I'm listening to him explain about Jesus. And I'm going, that's exactly what I was looking for. And he said, I'd be willing to pray with you. And he prayed with me right there. First church in the phone book. So someone handed me a Bible. I walked out, and the next day I was reading the Bible, and I knew something had changed in my heart. I was so excited. And I read, I didn't know what to do about the Bible either. It was like the phone book with churches. So I thought, well, you know, there's a logical way to approach this. So I thought, if I read the last book, I'll understand it all. And it was about dragons. And all I knew for sure at the end was, man, that 666, I am not getting that on my forehead. But I didn't, you know, I was like scared. Well, this bodybuilder was a night watchman at a railroad, and he called me that night from the railroad. And he said, he called me Bubba at the time. That was my name. And he said, hey, Bubba, you got any questions? And I said, yeah, what do you, I actually wasn't living an immoral life, really. But I said, well, what do you think about drugs, sex, and drinking? Just like a high school question. And he said, well, I won't tell you what I think. I'll tell you what the Bible says. He says, get out a pen and paper. So I did, and I was ready, and he said, well, write down these verses. So he'd say verses, and, you know, I'd write down numbers. And then he said, you got any more questions? He said, you go look those up after we're done talking. I said, well, actually, I got one more question for you. Let's say he said John 3:16. I said, well, can you explain to me what the John means, what the 3 means, and what the 16 means? You know, because I thought this is like the Dewey Decimal System at the library. And I don't know where to go. He said, oh, man, I'm so sorry. We'll do it on the phone. Well, a couple days later, he said, hey, he called me every night. So he said, hey, why don't you meet me at church on Thursday? So I went to church on Thursday, and attendance had dropped dramatically, and it was about 4 or 5 people. And so he said, well, I'd like to welcome the visitation team. It's Mike, the bodybuilder, leading it. And he said, and since no one visited the church this week, well, except me, and I had come to Christ, he said, let's go out witnessing at the shopping center. So I raised my hand and said, well, what's witnessing? And he said, well, we're going to go and talk to people about Jesus Christ. Now, you know, let's get personal right away. I don't know about your deodorant issues. Mine failed instantly. I was like, my hands started sweating. I was like, you got to be kidding. My friends from the football team hang out at the shopping center. What are we going to do? And how much do I know? And so he said, don't worry, I won't leave you. So we get to the shopping center. We get to the center of the shopping area. The other teams break up, and Mike stays with me. And he hands me a sheet of paper. It's like a half sheet. And it's got all these questions on it. And he said, hey, man, you stop here. You stay right here in the center of the shopping center, and you stop anybody that you think you want to talk to about Christ. I'll stand over in that doorway. This is a totally stupid way to do it. But believe it or not, it worked. And he said, if I think you're in trouble, I'll come help you. I'm thinking, don't leave. I'm in trouble. So I let a whole bunch of people go by, and then finally I stopped this young couple, and I asked them these questions. And Mike walked up right at the very end, and he started sharing the gospel with them. Now, I'm a 4-day-old Christian, and I know it sounds totally awkward. I mean, it was for me, but at this moment when he started sharing the gospel, up to that moment it was. But when he started talking to them, you know, I'm standing there, and I'm 16 years old, and I've just become a Christian, and I'm thrilled I'm a Christian, and he's explaining it again like he explained it to me just a couple days earlier. And this was my thought. That is so beautiful. And oh God, would you please let me someday know how to explain the beauty of what happened to me to someone like he's explaining it now. And you know, this young couple was very interested. Next week we went out and three girls became Christians, and we went out every Thursday night for the next 2 years all through high school. And during that time I realized, you know, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I'm so grateful that God put a man in my life that believed and had the courage to take me out. So tonight I'm going to be sharing about evangelism, but I want to tell you something. Is it's not a message for me like, oh, you should probably have a Christian message on evangelism. It's how I started as a Christian, and I'm just so excited and I'm so grateful. And I want you to know that's what I'm sharing from. I'm just so grateful that God let me, a guy who wanted to be in the mafia, become a Christian. And I'm just so grateful that God let me learn how to share my faith and gave me someone to help me. So I just hope in some small way I'm a help to you. So I've got three talks this weekend: evangelism, disciple making, and a vision for your life. And so tonight I'm on the topic of evangelism, and I'm just going to share three simple points. I titled it Reaching Friends for Christ. My wife, I told the K-Stater, she went to seminary. She said, always overview your talk, so here goes. For those of you who like to take notes, it's prayer from your heart, care from your heart, and share from your heart. So prayer from your heart, care from your heart, and share from your heart. Now I do have one little subtitle in that, and it's the next slide, and it says, just don't ask me to be weird. You guys recognize Brother Jed? Does he come to your campus? Don't be that guy. Especially don't share the gospel like that, however he's doing. That's not the way to do it. So don't worry, I am not going to ask you to be weird. But I am going to ask you to pray, care, and share. So here goes. For those of you who like to take notes, I'm on prayer. Freshman year, I go to Western Illinois University, and they assigned Mike Jordahl, who now today is the U.S. Collegiate Director, to my dorm to help me in evangelism at college now. Now it's 2 years later. And Mike comes to my hall. I'm involved with the Navigators. There's like five people in the ministry. Mike goes, let's invite every single guy in your residence hall to read the Bible with us. I'm like, well, Mike, that's 550 guys. Yeah, I know, it'll be great. So we did that. And then on my floor, honestly, that was the hardest for me. You know, it was easier on the other floors. But I was feeling awkward again. So I invited every single guy on my floor to read the Bible with me on Monday nights, me and Mike. And I just didn't know how this would go. So Monday night came and I invited every single guy on my floor, about 35 guys or so. And 7 o'clock on Monday night came. And I'm starting to think this is a bad idea. Well, how many guys do you think came at 7 o'clock? How many were there? 8? 2. How about 0? Nobody came. At 5 after 7, 17 guys were there. Half the floor came. And we read John chapter 1 with them, and Mike had promised we'd end in 30 minutes. I had promised 30 minutes. At the end of 30 minutes, Mike said, hey, we've read the Bible for 30 minutes. We'll keep to our word. So let's end. So everybody's getting up, and one guy goes, what do you think about the end of the world? Everybody sits down. So we went to 8:30. It was awesome. So I started praying in my limited faith, remember my points prayer, that 7 men on my floor would come to Christ. I don't know why I didn't pray 17 or 35, but for some reason I prayed 7. Well, guess how many came to Christ? Well, actually what happened was 7 guys in my hall, remember all those other studies? We had gone to other floors too. 7 guys came to Christ that year, but not on my floor, but 7 guys in the hall. And here's what I started thinking is, you know, God heard my prayer. I mean, maybe He didn't lock it down to my location, but He heard my prayer. Who are you praying for? I saw this quote one time. It says, Satan doesn't care if you talk to men about God, as long as you don't talk to God about men. And I just want to say, God listens to your prayers. When He hears you praying for your Greek house, your apartment, your classmates, your residence hall, He hears. And maybe, in his scheme of things and the way he worked the whole universe was to line you up into that place for people on your floor for their eternities. And he's saying, will you pray? Will you be the intercessor for this floor, this house? And I feel like God sent me to Thompson Hall at Western Illinois to pray for Thompson Hall. Are you a man of prayer? Are you a woman of prayer in the place God's placed you? What a joy, what a privilege, what a responsibility. And my guess is, even as I was talking, God's bringing to your mind people and you're going, I know God's calling me to pray for them. I mean, He's calling me. And I'm asking you, would you respond and say, you know, I'm going to write their names down. I'm going to become an intercessor for my hall, my floor, these people. Here's just three quick ideas that I thought of was, could all of us think of at least three friends to pray for by name that don't know Christ? Could we pray with a Christian friend? Could we get a group of Christian friends in our hall or apartment or Greek house to pray together? And say, pray with me. On the way home, you might say, you might form a prayer partner or prayer group that's going to say, I'm going to pray for where we live. But I know that I just have to believe that as I was speaking, God laid it on your heart and said, I need to be praying for these people. It's on my heart to be praying. You know, I was praying 16 years for a guy who just came to Christ recently. 16 years. I know because I prayed from the day he was born. And my nephew came to Christ recently. I prayed for him since the day he was born. Sometimes we don't see it right away, but God still calls us to pray. Here's my second point. Care from your heart. Prayer from your heart, care from your heart. You know, I was reading a survey that Coke did. Coca-Cola, not cocaine. And they went to a couple college campuses and they did a taste test on Coke, Diet Coke, Cherry Coke. A Christian group did it, this taste test. And then at the end of the taste test, they also asked everybody who tasted these three different Cokes with the covers all covered up this question. And here's the question. What comes to your mind when you hear someone say that he or she is a Christian? So you see it up there. What comes to your mind when you hear someone say that he or she is a Christian? And this was to college students. So what do you think the results were? Well, the results were of the three types of Coke, Coke won. But you're probably more interested in the answer to that big question. That's what I was interested in. Well, this Christian group took the results of the survey and they basically found these two answers. I mean, the way they summarized however many people filled out the survey. I got to warn you, it's not good. It says, here was their first, I took it right from the article. Christians are stuck-up people who enjoy hanging out with other Christians to the exclusion of all others. That's how college students were viewing Christians. As stuck-up people who enjoy hanging out with other Christians to the exclusion of all others. And then the second one was, Christians think they are too good for anyone else. Well, you know, when I read that, I had two almost immediate thoughts. And my first thought from my heart was, am I those things? I wonder if I am. I wonder if I'm the one who's giving Christians a bad name. You know, I wonder if it's me. I wonder if I'm doing that. I know I don't want to be that, but I wonder if I'm doing that. And then the second thought I had was, they wouldn't have said that about Jesus. If they had known Jesus, they would never have said that about Jesus. They would have never said that. In fact, the thing that got Jesus in trouble the most, my view of the Gospels is, the whole issue that he did, the opposite of this, instead of just hanging out with the religious people, he hung out with what the Pharisees called sinners. And in fact, the Pharisees gave him a label. They thought they were being as insulting as they could be. In Luke 7:34, Jesus is repeating their label and he says, they called him friend of sinners. They thought that was the ultimate put down. Now I think every single person in this room would say, if you would call me that, it would be one of the greatest honors you would ever say about me, that I was a friend of sinners. And that's what I want to be. I'm not saying I always am, but But I sure want to be. And you feel the same way. To be like Jesus and to be a friend of sinners. The Pharisees were using that word. In fact, in Luke 15, 1 and 2, it says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners," in quotation marks, were all gathering around to hear him. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered. You know, muttered means, "This man welcomes sinners and he eats with them." That bugged them. It didn't bug Jesus. He did it on purpose. And I was having a quiet time one day and I was reading this verse and I wrote down next to this passage, why were these people attracted to Jesus? And I think it's because he was attracted to them. He loved them. And then I wrote down, I'm using the word right from the Pharisees there, are the sinners attracted to me? And I want, and you want, you're here. I mean, I know you came because you want to be stronger in reaching the people around you and making disciples. We all want to be more like Jesus. We don't want to be laborers just because the navigators say be laborers. That's a good thing, but a great thing would be to be like Jesus. You know, there's a church in our town that really has experienced tremendous growth. My sons go there for youth group every Wednesday night, but they trace back their growth to something that happened in the church, and that's when a stripper came to Christ in our town. Now, I actually know where the strip club is only for one reason. I've never been in there. It's right next to the roller skating rink where I take my kids. Well, this girl came to Christ and started coming to church. Now, guess what? She kind of dressed like a stripper. And she started bringing her friends. I don't know if there's a Sears, JCPenney section, conservative Christian women, strippers. Stripper section, you know. But whatever clothes they were wearing, it was making the whole church uncomfortable. Kind of like how the Pharisees felt uncomfortable about Jesus. So one woman in the church came to the pastor one day all upset and said, "Pastor, we have all these strippers coming to our church and they dress like strippers." And he said, "What would you like me to do about it? What would you like our church to do about it?" And she said, "I guess we're just going to have to love them." And that's how that church changed. And realize we will be among sinners, among the lost, just like Jesus. You know, we moved into Fort Collins 8 years ago, and we had come from a neighborhood that, unbelievable neighborhood. We had parties all the time as neighbors. We all had each other's keys to our houses. We all had children at the same time. We all watched each other's children. We had a prayer meeting weekly. It was close to heaven. I moved into my Fort Collins neighborhood, met the neighbors next to us, and next morning, can you imagine the rush? You know, you unpack a truck, you got little kids, and we're just exhausted. 7 in the morning, I hear pounding on my door. I mean, it sounds panicked. My hair standing straight up, the little I have left, and I looked for a hat. I found a hat. I ran down, and it's my neighbor, and he's mad. I've been in the house, 12 hours? And he says, you're running your sprinkler system too much. And, I'd never had a sprinkler system before. I didn't know it could run. I didn't know anything. But it was going over into his lawn, I guess. And that was my start. Then a couple days later, I'm standing outside talking to his wife, and she goes, "Do you have an elephant gun?" And I said, "No, I don't." An elephant gun? I grew up in Illinois. Are there elephants out here? I mean... So I walked back in the house and I said to my wife Linda, I said, I think she's trying to say cut your grass because elephants are hiding in it. Now she's telling me it's time to cut my grass. Well then, I decided we should build a fence. We lived a house over from a busy street. I thought we'll build a fence, protect my little boys, so that it's a Colorado kind of thing to share the cost of building a fence with your neighbors. So we didn't have a neighbor on one side. It was an empty lot. We had a neighbor behind us. Said, "Would you share the cost?" He said, "Gladly." I went to the neighbors who were already having a little tension with, and they said, "Sure." So I brought out a fence builder. They built the fence. While they were building the fence, my neighbors threatened the fence builder's life. So then he got done. He told me the bill. I paid him. Then I went over to my neighbor behind me. He paid me, let's say it was $500. I actually have no idea what it was anymore. So I went to my neighbors next to me. I said, hey, it's $500. He said, we're not paying you one dime. Wow. I'm getting a little mad, to be honest. So then one day, now I've grown up around animals all my life. I think animals like me. I'm mowing the lawn, and all of a sudden one day their dog bit me. That's right about there. And that's not their dog. I didn't take any pictures of their dog. I just took like a mean-looking dog. And then ran and drew blood. All right, now I'm mad. And you know what? I want revenge. So you know how I got revenge? I changed their name. I know what their name is. But I changed their name to the Hooligans. Now, hooligan is Irish for troublemakers. So I would call them the Hooligans in my house. I would say to my wife, oh, the Hooligans are out. Or I'd tell the boys, don't play with the Hooligans. That was my way of getting revenge. Did I mention I'm in full-time Christian work? And I'm name-calling in my house. They don't know that. Every time they saw me, I'm waving high and bye. One day I'm cutting the grass, and my Jewish neighbor from across the street comes over. And I have a rule. If my neighbors want to talk to me or if my sons want to talk to me, I will stop everything and listen. Now, of course, my wife has my ear too, but with little boys, when little boys decide to speak, you listen. When neighbors want to speak, you listen. So I turned off my lawnmower. About 45 minutes, Peter talked to me. So I turned on the lawnmower. When he's done, I went about two more rows, and the Hooligans, the wife came out. And she said, Jim, so I turned off the lawnmower. She said, Jim, I want to talk to you. And she said, Jim, I don't know if you know what's going on in our house, but I have breast cancer. And I'm really concerned about the children, and I just want to talk to you. And oh my gosh, my heart broke. I mean, instantly broke. Then the husband came out, Steve, and then we talked, and I said, Steve, I'm so sorry. He said, oh, Chris told you. And he said, I'm really concerned for the children and what would happen. And we talked for a long time. So then they went inside, and I started the lawnmower, and all I could think of was, first of all, I was concerned for Chris and Steve, and then I thought, what am I going to say to my little boys when I go back inside? So I went to the backyards, kept mowing the lawn, and a neighbor threw a rock at the fence to grab my attention. I turned off the lawnmower, and he came up to the fence and started crying. Told me about some things with his children, just in tears. 3 hours later, I went back inside. Yeah. Well, I got my sons together, and I said, Michael and Matthew, I need to apologize to you. You know, I tell you guys that I love people who don't know Christ, and I tell you to love people who don't know Christ, and I've been calling the neighbors hooligans, and I'll never do that again, and I'm so sorry. And God would want us to have compassion on them, and we won't call them the hooligans. Now, I just feel so bad. I feel so embarrassed even telling you. But you know what changed my heart at that moment is I had become so critical of them that I didn't have any more compassion for them. It just groaned. My heart was so critical. But when Chris told me, it was just gone. And you know what changed for me was Matthew 9:36. Just compassion came over me. And it says, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. And you know, that's what motivated Jesus. And can I just tell you, you can be on, I don't care how many evangelism teams you're on. I don't care what evangelism activity you sign up for. If you don't have compassion like I was struggling with, you'll never share your faith. You'll never pray. You'll never care. It'll never be from your heart. It might be an activity you schedule. I'm not saying, obviously, I've just showed that I'm not a person totally of compassion, but I want to be. I want to grow, and I want God to help me grow, and so do you. You may have a hooligan that you call in your life that really needs your compassion. This pastor at our church in Illinois, he got up one Sunday. I was traveling with Navigators. People told me about it. I think it's the greatest sermon ever preached. It's probably one of the shortest. He got up, very compassionate man, and he got up and he was telling the church that they should reach out to their neighbors. And in the middle of his sermon, he convicted himself. And he said, what am I doing telling you guys to reach out to your neighbors? I don't even know the names of my neighbors. And he sat down. He just stopped. He just couldn't even do it. It was too hypocritical to him. And then the next week he came back and he told the church every name of all his neighbors. That was a good message. You know, we're trying to reach our neighbors. You know, I told you about Peter, our Jewish neighbors. You know, we've celebrated Hanukkah with them. We've read the scriptures with them. We lit the menorah candle up and down, you know. One day we were walking home from their house, and my wife said, "Do you think they're trying to convert us to Judaism?" And I said, "I don't know about that, but I'm trying to convert them." And you know, some of you might say, "Oh, that you mean your friendship is based on them converting to Christ?" Not at all. But I'll tell you, part of my friendship is believing and praying that God would use me to help share Christ with them. You know, we've had so much snow in Colorado. One Sunday, I just wanted to get to church, and I was, you know, once again, it was another. We had six storms in 6 weeks, and I had made a decision that I would take care of Peter's driveway, and I thought, I had a bad attitude about taking care of Peter's driveway with all that snow, and I was out there, and I thought, church is getting closer, and I just decided, you know, I guess today I'm just going to live out a Christian life instead of going to church. I'm going to take care of my Jewish neighbor's driveway. Care from your heart. Now, I want to say, you know, I know a lot of us think that, well, if I was to spend a lot of time with people who don't know Christ, I'd have to pretty much be in bars all the time. This is pretty much, this next slide is the example. You know, you'd have to either be, you know, at a party or a church. Because that's the only place people who don't know Christ are, right? They're at a party. And the only place Christians are is at church. But what's reality? Reality is they're not in a bar all that many hours. I know, I was in a bar till 3, 4 in the morning on weekends. They're not. Most people went home by 2. But, you know, the truth is, us as Christians, we're not in a church all that many hours or a NAB meeting all that many hours in a week. There's lots of hours where our lives can connect. So here's my, it's not an official survey, here's my thoughts on what Christians on campus do for fun. Now, there is a little bit of Colorado hint in there, so get ready. But I think it's true for you. Is you like to have friends over to hang out. You like to watch movies. You like to play sports, watch sports, frisbee, up, climbing, skiing, mountains. But you like that from all the Midwest. Playing poker, fantasy football. There may be one or two women who play fantasy football, but mostly it's a guy's thing. Do you know the average guy who plays fantasy football spends $154 a year on scouting reports and thinks about it 38 minutes a day? So so women, if you're out on a date, your guy's drifting, he's thinking about fantasy football. Next one is shopping. Now, I know some men would say I like shopping, but maybe I should have said not me. I wouldn't even have clothes if it wasn't for my wife. That's what Christians want to do. Okay, what do our friends on campus who don't know Christ do for fun? Now, the list is amazing. Watch this. Well, they like to have friends over to hang out. They like movies, sports, frisbee, climbing, poker, fantasy football, but not the women so much. Shopping, not the men so much. The key is to get us together at the same place. That's the key. So how can you live out care? Well, my guess is, as I talked, maybe some application came to your mind, but I just want to suggest 3. Wherever you are, if it's, you know, when you leave your room, lock your room, but when you're in your room, leave your door open sometimes. It's kind of a wind tunnel effect. People will be walking by your room with no idea that they're planning on going to your room. Your door's open, and then it just sucks them right in. And you've seen it. On your hall, in your Greek house, leave your door open when you want to talk. Avoid the holy huddle at dinner. You know, when I was in my hall, there were 3 sections of the cafeteria and the Christians ate in one. Well, I said, breakfast is for Christians, dinner's for my floor. Lunch, if I can get it, be great. But dinner every day was with my floor. Invite someone to eat with you. It seems like Jesus did that. You know, food is the common, it's probably one of the best evangelism tools ever made. Chocolate's better. But food's good. Well, what have I said so far? Prayer and care. Now I just want to say just a couple comments about share. First, I just want to say, and I want to break a myth. The myth is people don't want to hear about Christ. That's a myth. People do want to hear about Christ. And I actually can prove it. I actually brought proof. You did. You wanted to hear. I did. First time anyone explained the gospel to me, I became a Christian. Are our friends so different than us? I believe people want to hear. It may take a while. It may be a process. I believe that for sure. But I think people do want to hear about God and about Jesus' love for them. Second is, you know, the simplest way that I've ever done in sharing the gospel is I'll just, when people share a struggle with me, I'll just say, can I pray for you? And I never had anyone say, no, that's weird. They've always been grateful. One day I had a policy for a long time of going to the convenience store every Sunday morning to buy donuts for our family to increase our odds of getting to church on time. Because we were struggling with that. But donuts, and my wife doesn't have to cook anything, you know. And the other thing is I kind of like donuts. And so I went to the convenience store and did my normal ritual. And I bought a Sunday newspaper and donuts. And a cappuccino. And from one of those machines. Well, I got up to the counter. There was only one other. There was an older woman in front of me and the guy behind the counter. Just the three of us in the store. And so the older woman got ahead of me, you know. Rightly so, and she was paying for her things, and the guy behind the counter was wearing this little teddy bear pin. So she said, hey, what's that pin you're wearing? He goes, oh, it's a teddy bear pin. She goes, oh. And then she pays and walks out. So then I walk up with my stuff, I put it on the counter, I go, so what's the teddy bear pin for? He goes, it's for my son who died just recently. I said, your son died? He said, yeah, just a little baby, and we talked about it. And I said, first, oh, my heart's broken for you. I just had a son. And I said, what is your name? I've been coming in here. I've never asked your name. He said, it's Steve. I said, I'm Jim. And you know what happened? No one came in the store for an hour. And we just talked. And at the end, I said, Steve, my heart's broken for you. And would you mind if I would, not here in the store or anything, can I be praying for you? That God would, whatever you want me to pray, he said, pray God gives us children. I said, I promise, I will. I promise you. We hung out every Sunday morning, and you know, he just sent me at Christmas a picture of his two children. And I was at a church last year speaking in Bloomington, Illinois. They had invited me back. And I got done speaking, and who stands up at the very end from the last row? It was Steve. And I just ran. I just ran all the way and I just hugged Steve. And this is total wrong evangelism. I go, Steve, are you a Christian? Total. It's not in any seminar. And he goes, no, I'm not, but I'm getting closer. I left that church. I got on my cell phone, called Rick, the pastor, and said, Rick, I got a mission for you. It's Steve. He said, I'm on it. But can I pray for you in such a simple way? Only if you mean it. You guys are being so nice to me listening to my stories. Hang in there, okay? A couple more. Don't fear awkward moments. I know it's sometimes you think, oh, it's going to be such an awkward moment to bring up Jesus, but can I just tell you, have courage. I was at a Carl's Jr. one time, and I was meeting with a college student. My back was to the counter. And I'm meeting with this guy. And this is a weird story, but so he's talking with me, and he's not paying attention. He's like, it's like this around my head, and you know, no words are coming out. He's just like, oh. So I turn around, I look, and what it was, there's a girl with her hair on fire. And what had happened? It's a weird story, and she doesn't know it. So what had happened is this girl behind the counter at Carl's Jr., she had two things of French fries in her hands, and she had the hat, the visor, and she had, I don't know what girls call when you pile up your hair. I don't know, pile. She had a pile of hair. And so it's piled, and there's a flame coming out. And what had happened is she had gone to the French fries, she had bent over, and I think the combination of the heating element and hairspray, poof, it just lit. And so she's walking, you know, and so I saw it, and so I, of course, I did the right thing. I screamed and I went, nothing can, you know, it's just, you're, so I literally leaped over the back of the chair and started running to the counter. And, of course, I'm the focus of attention now. I mean, you know, totally embarrassing myself. And she sees me. I don't want to knock guitars. And so she sees me coming and she starts backing up. And I can understand, man. No words are coming out. I'm just running. And so this coworker looks at me and sees me looking at her and looks up and realizes it and pats out her head. And it went right out. And so I actually went back like later that week and I saw her and she had a real short haircut. And she looked good and everything and she said, thank you. Well, the question is, did I totally embarrass myself for a minute? Sure. But, you know, you're not going to be like that in evangelism, running. Oh! And you're so afraid it's going to, but you know, if you bring up Jesus, it's not going to be as bizarre as my story, but they're going to say thank you for risking. Because that's what I was doing, I was risking. I thought, why didn't, you know, nothing against my friend, but I thought, one day I thought I should ask him, why didn't you get up? So don't fear the awkward moments. So what I said basically was, people want to hear. You can ask, can I pray for you? Don't fear when you have to bring up Jesus. So I said, prayer from your heart, care from your heart, share from your heart. One last story. You know, you all know the story of the Titanic. I actually haven't seen the movie yet, but I don't know. I know the facts of the story, though. I know there won't be a Titanic 2. The sequel. But here's what I do know. I was reading this article. And do you know mostly the survivors were women and children? And when I read that, I'm just so proud of men. Do you know what the men did? The men made sure the women and children got on the life rafts. The men gave the women their vests. I was so proud when I read that, of men. I'm proud of women too, but in this story, I just wanted to tell you what happened. Do you know 1,528 people went into the water, not into a lifeboat. Of those 1,528, maybe you know, I don't even know if this was in the movie, but only six were saved from the water. They died of drowning and hypothermia. But they had a survivors meeting for all the people. The six pulled out of the water, and then of course all the women and children, some men, some crew from the boats. And when they had their survivors meeting, they told the story of a man who was saved twice that night. One of the six in the water. And what had happened is a minister with his six-year-old daughter was on the ship. He put his daughter in a lifeboat, gave his vest to someone, went into the water, and then he swam from person to person and yelled out, "Are you saved?" His name was John Harper. And he would yell to people, "Are you saved?" And he yelled to this one man, "Are you saved?" And the man said, he knew what he meant. He knew not from life and death. He meant spiritually. And the man said, "No." And John Harper yelled out, "Believe on the Lord Jesus Christ and thou shalt be saved." And then a wave took him away. And then a wave brought him back. And he said, "Are you saved?" And the man yelled out, "No." And he said, "Believe on the Lord Jesus Christ and thou shalt be saved." And the man gave his life to Christ and John Harper drowned. And when I read that, I thought, this man with his very last breath shared the gospel. His very last breath. But I thought you would never share the gospel in your last breath if you weren't sharing the gospel in your living breaths. And so we're going to go from this conference and God's going to give us by His grace many more living breaths to ask people to meet Jesus. And we'll be God's tool to introduce them to Christ. Let me close in prayer. Oh, Jesus, there's precious men and women around us that need our love, that need our compassion, that need our prayers, that need our words. Lord, it's not a burden, it's a joy. Would you please give us the courage, the love, the eyes to see, the heart to care, the hands to touch these people that you've sent into our lives. Thank you for letting us come to know you. In Christ's name, amen.